and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Chris.
And my name is Tessa.
And this is Pro Wrestling Repackaged, where the squared circle meets the small screen. This is part two of our look at wrestler guest appearances on sitcoms. And in this episode, we're going to be taking a look at some guest appearances by Triple H, Chyna, Billy Gunn, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. But before we dive in, I wanted to quickly mention that I recently appeared on a podcast called The Last Row. I have mentioned them previously, but if you're not familiar, The Last Row is a very good movie podcast. They call themselves a pretty good movie podcast. I call them a very good movie podcast. And I was lucky enough to be able to join Drew of The Last Row to talk about Cobra Kai on their latest episode. We talked about seasons 1 through 3, and then also some of our predictions and hopes for season 4. It's a very Terry Silver-focused discussion, so if that's your jam, then definitely go check them out. You can find them at thelastrowpodcast.com or on Twitter and Instagram at thelastrowpod, and of course, they are on all platforms, wherever you get your podcasts. Definitely check that out. It was a lot of fun, and I thank them for having me on. But now we move over to the focus of this episode, which is more wrestler guest appearances on sitcoms. And we talked a little bit about this last episode, but there's always just something a little extra fun whenever there's some kind of celebrity, like an athlete or a musician, something like that. Whenever they appear on a sitcom, it's always a little bit more memorable. In fact, for me, some of the most memorable episodes of sitcoms involve a celebrity guest appearance. Like, I could rattle a bunch off the top of my head, but I want to know, Tessa, what do you immediately think of when you think of a celebrity appearing on a sitcom?
So this might be the result of me hitting my head really hard as a child, but my memories of celebrity guest appearances come more from animated shows and the Dukes of Hazzard.
Of course.
But I do very vividly remember, you know, the Beach Boys on Full House. I remembered watching Alice Cooper on That 70s Show. I like Alice Cooper. So those are my main ones as far as like non-actor guest appearances.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a little bit different. When there's like a celebrity actor that appears, it's like, okay, well, this is just a guest star. But when you have an athlete or a musician or someone who's just a fish out of water, it is a little bit more memorable in that way. And yeah, the Beach Boys on Full House is an obvious one. For me, there's a lot of Full House because that was always one of my shows growing up. I think Little Richard on Full House is one of the first ones that always comes to mind. You know, I think Little Richard just walked through the kitchen. Also, Wayne Newton and Frankie Valli were on Full House. But another one that immediately comes to mind is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing basketball with Uncle Jesse. I'll never forget that. Keith Hernandez on Seinfeld is a bona fide classic. Paul O'Neill of the Yankees was also on Seinfeld. But another one that just lives rent-free in my mind, as the kids are saying these days, would have to be El DeBarge on The Facts of Life. In fact, I was talking to you recently about this episode and just the random small details about it that I still think about randomly to this day.
I was mostly just disturbed by that because I don't think I've ever seen the cast of The Facts of Life as adults on the show.
Yeah, that's always weird to go back to as well when they're all grown up. It's a little strange, but that's like one of the, like, if you say celebrities on sitcoms, that's like one of the first three that come to mind. And it's weird because Jermaine Jackson was also on The Facts of Life, but that's weirdly not the one that I go to.
You'd think that would be it.
You knowing me, you'd think that would be the one that I go to, but no, it's El DeBarge singing You Wear It Well. But there have been, you know, all these wrestler guest appearances on sitcoms. And I just have to wonder, do people think of these in the same way that I might think of an El DeBarge on The Facts of Life? Do people think of Triple H on The Drew Carey Show? You know, do people?
I hope so.
Like, you got to wonder if that's someone's only exposure to some of these wrestlers, or like the main thing that they go back to. Like, do people mainly think of Vader from his appearances on Boy Meets World? I'm so curious about, for like a non-wrestling fan or a non-diehard, would they immediately, just when you say Vader, when you say Triple H or something like that, would this be what they immediately go to? Like, I immediately go to El DeBarge. Of course, I know El DeBarge's music, but it's just that appearance made a very big impression on me. And I have to wonder if people feel the same way about any of these episodes that we're talking about.
I think with Vader, probably for sure, because he had an expanded role on the show. But if it's just someone like, we're going to talk about Stone Cold on the Bernie Mac show, maybe not so much.
That's probably one of the least memorable ones for sure. And we'll get to it. But before we do, we're going to dive into the Drew Carey Show. That's where we're starting off. Triple H appearing on the Drew Carey Show in January of 1999. Now, the Drew Carey Show, for those who aren't familiar, it aired on ABC for 9 seasons from 1995 to 2004. And if you do want to check any of this out, or you want to check this episode in particular, this show is not available to stream in full anywhere. I think there's a season available for purchase on Amazon, but you can watch this episode on Dailymotion, and we will link to that as well in the episode description. How would you describe the Drew Carey Show for those not familiar, just briefly?
Yeah, so Drew Carey plays a not necessarily exaggerated, but more of a common man version of himself. Drew Carey, of course, was a comedian. And the show is set in Cleveland and revolves primarily around this retail office setting and the home life of Drew Carey, who, again, is playing an everyman, just another fictionalized version. It has a great, in my opinion, cast of characters. I have vivid memories of this show, personally.
It's funny because this was a show that I did watch at, like, after school, doing homework, that type of thing. So I do have some pretty strong memories of it, but I definitely haven't seen every episode. And it's not one that immediately comes to mind when I think of, you know, classic sitcoms that I've enjoyed over the years. But I do like it overall. And watching the show again for this episode, it did remind me of, you know, a lot of the things, you know, immediately came back to me. I think the theme song is very memorable.
Right.
It's very catchy, slightly annoying, but, you know, helps make the show more memorable for me. But the thing that really got me watching it this time around is having watched a lot of Who's Line with You.
Yes.
Over the past few years, which is not something that I had ever watched in the past. And particularly Ryan Stiles, who I love on that show, and realizing, oh yeah, he was on the Drew Carey Show. Drew Carey, not the funniest person on the show or on Whose Line or the Drew Carey Show. I think by far, I think Ryan Stiles is great, but no, it is a great cast. I think it's a very funny show.
I remember the Drew Carey Show being on TBS a lot when I was a kid, and we would watch it a lot. I think it was always on either right before or right after Home Improvement, which I also watched a lot of. But at the same time I was watching the Drew Carey Show, I was also obsessed with Whose Line Is It Anyway? So loving the Drew Carey Show wasn't really a huge stretch for me. Plus, now looking back, you know, it's set in Cleveland. Cleveland's an area I'm very familiar with. It's very immediate, where a lot of sitcoms are really, they're in New York or they're in somewhere in California. And I have no grasp of those locations. So I think I have an even bigger soft spot for it looking back.
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense. And you know, this wouldn't be Drew Carey's only involvement with the world of wrestling. Of course, everyone would go back to his appearance in the 2001 Royal Rumble, being destroyed by Kane. But he's also had wrestlers on Whose Line, right? Particularly China.
China, yeah. I remember, I used to watch Whose Line Is It Anyway after Raw, like every Monday when I couldn't go to sleep. It'd be 11 o'clock at night and Whose Line would be on ABC Family. And I remember one night, all of a sudden there was China, but they couldn't call her China because it was post WWE. And it was so bizarre.
Yeah, that China post WWE period is awkward and it's rough. And being that we just watched that Vice documentary on China, it puts a lot of things into a better light, into more context. And we will definitely discuss a lot about China a little bit later on, because she is one of the subjects of this episode. But for now, we got to talk about the dog, Triple H, on the Drew Carey Show.
Or as China refers to him in her book, when talking about the Drew Carey Show, she calls him a worm.
Ooh.
He's a worm.
Maybe more appropriate would be a rat.
Oh.
We're talking about this episode. We're talking about The Drew Carey Show, Season 4, Episode 16, entitled Rats, Kate's Dating a Wrestler. And this originally aired January 27th, 1999. So what's the summary of this episode?
Drew, Kate, Oswald, and Lewis, they all sell a caffeinated beer called Buzz Beer, which I kept typing as Buzz Bear, which would have been a whole different thing.
Sounds like a territories wrestler.
It was being sold at their local bar, but unfortunately, the bar was taken over by chemically altered lab rats. But they still need to make a profit. Drew really wants to quit his job. So they decide to approach the disciplinarian, a pro wrestler, to be their celebrity spokesperson. He agrees, but unfortunately he starts dating Kate, which is bad news because all of her relationships end in disaster, and this one is no different. The disciplinarian likes Buzz Beer so much, he begins missing appearances because of it. It's all bad.
Just a complete downward spiral.
It's really,
for the disciplinarian, who becomes very undisciplined throughout the course of the episode. I gotta say it. The disciplinarian, perhaps the precursor to The Chaperone.
My favorite movie.
Ray Bradstone. one of those classic movies that we watched about 15 minutes of before turning off.
I have it on DVD. Someone got it for me as a joke.
Oh, what a joke it is.
I've seen it.
I think before we really get into it, I just think the idea of Triple H drinking alcohol is pretty funny, just knowing him having to pretend that he drinks beer and gets drunk and misses appearances, like the complete opposite of who he is as a professional.
Yeah, that's such an interesting choice. And I kind of wonder if it was done on purpose or if it was just, here's a guy who's up and coming, really, really making a name for himself in wrestling. He just so happens to not be a drunk like everyone else.
I think it was just a coincidence. Yeah. I highly doubt that, especially at that time, Triple H would have been bragging about the fact that he's not getting drunk and pilled up with all of his other DX buddies. I think he was definitely an outlier, especially in the late 90s, especially at this time. And while, you know, the concept of the straight edge wrestler has been made more popular, especially because of the rise of CM Punk, you know, over a decade ago at this point, Triple H is someone who quietly, doesn't do drugs, or I guess if you don't count steroids, and or drink alcohol. And I think that's pretty cool, just personally. But
considering who he was surrounded by and the fact that he like willingly babysat all of those guys for years.
Chaperone.
Yes. He was the disciplinarian.
He literally was.
I mean, he couldn't control them, but he tried.
He did his best. But this episode comes at kind of an interesting time in Triple H's career. This is January 1999. In fact, this episode aired 2 days after China turning on Triple H and joining the corporation after a WWF title match against The Rock on an episode of Raw. And we're still talking about long tights Triple H here. Mm-hmm. And this is around the time when he also had that weird braid, that long braid in his hair. Really the original Bianca Belair when you think about it. But he's still the leader of DX. You know, this is X-Pac and the Outlaws version of DX. This is pre-corporation heel turn. So he's kind of in this weird, almost floundering babyface role. I mean, DX is popular, but he hasn't found himself yet.
Well, yeah, and China gives some interesting context for this episode in her book, her 2001 autobiography, If They Only Knew. She actually, as a Christmas, birthday, and Valentine's present, all three rolled into one. Triple H was supposed to take her to Las Vegas because he's cheap, I guess. I don't know.
What?
Yeah, well, her birthday is around Christmas. She has a birthday in December. And so he's like, what do you want for Christmas? And she's like, you know what? Put this in as my birthday present, too. And he's like, I was going to do that. She's like, take me to Vegas. Put it as Valentine's Day, too. I was going to do that already. So he's just like a cheap, like, bad guy, I guess, in real life. So
my God.
So all of that, like, wrapped into one birthday present. He was supposed to take her to Las Vegas. But then 2 days before their flight, he excitedly tells her that they can't go anymore because the Drew Carey show wants him. And she's, you know, she's a team player. She says yes. It's a huge opportunity for him at this time. She wants to support him in his acting because, you know, it'll help propel him. She specifically says, and I have to say his work has really improved, talking about his acting. Case in point, he really looks married to Stephanie McMahon.
Ooh.
And that really, that cut me.
Wow. I'm glad that we've thus far chosen to talk about a lot of wrestlers who have books and have documented these periods of their life.
Yeah, it's really beneficial that it seems like every wrestler was writing a book in like the early mid 2000s.
Yeah.
Even Triple H has one.
We have Mick Foley to thank for that.
Yeah.
So let's dive into Triple H's role in this episode. You know, much like Vader and Mankind, he plays a wrestler in this episode. However, he doesn't play Triple H. He doesn't play any sort of fictional version of himself. He plays a character called the Disciplinarian, as we mentioned. The Disciplinarian, not too far from being Triple H, except for the fact that his gear is a little bit more leather stud-ish, almost Rob Halford influenced, I guess maybe taking a cue from Shawn Michaels, but
makes sense.
Very different way. He's got the long straight hair that looks awful.
Oh.
And he, you know, it's still, like I said, this is still long tights Triple H. This is not the Triple H that we would immediately think of. But the Disciplinarian as a character, kind of the generic caricature of what you would think a wrestler might be in the late 90s. His promo that we get to see in the episode is a little bit generic and aggro, aside from the Buzz Beer plug. It's kind of paint by numbers. This is what people might think of a wrestler. So here's what we present as a wrestler.
I was going to say, you know, this could be because, you know, sitcom writers aren't the same as, you know, wrestling writers. So they're just going off of whatever. They're just going off of stereotypes. So maybe the writers themselves aren't really watching wrestling so much. And if Triple H himself didn't have much of an input in what his promo or character would be here, it's about what you expect.
It's weird because it seems like there's some sort of connection between Drew Carey and wrestling, mm-hmm. because we rattled off two other connections that he has. So and they've also done like the green screen on Whose Line. They've had some wrestling, you know, scenes that they've had to...
In the newscasters.
Yeah. So there is some, at least an interest. You know, I could see him maybe flipping on wrestling in the late 90s. I could see that being a thing that maybe he watched and was a bit of a fan of, or maybe he was a fan when he was younger and then continued to keep tabs on it. But yeah, the writing just screams of a writing team that doesn't understand wrestling. I think this comes a lot closer than something like The Rock on That 70s Show. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a more accurate portrayal, especially that backstage promo scene, you know, because it kind of looked like it could have been shot at Raw. It had like the chain link fence in the background. It's the Disciplinarian surrounded by
some extras,
the members of his faction, who seemed to be two random muscly dudes in the back, and then someone who appears to be China. But we're not actually sure if it is China. It looks like it could be.
There's some stuff in her book about her experience on set. You know, she was there to support him. She was on set. You know, of course, at the time we know they were dating. She claims she did a walk-on cameo before the live show, which was supposed to be edited in later in post-production. I'm not sure if that's what this is. She didn't mention doing a scene with Triple H specifically. But she does say that she was forced to leave the set, given no real reason.
What?
At the time, she was escorted to Triple H's trailer. She wasn't allowed to be there. She wasn't allowed to watch like everyone else was watching. She chalked this up to it being about the conceited female star, she says, I won't name names, who allegedly was behind this directive to have me booted. Seems she felt I was stealing some of her much undeserved attention. And that's when she calls Triple H a worm. Because he didn't stick up for her.
So Kate had beef with China.
Like, that's the implication. Seems like nobody really told her the exact reason for why she was kicked off. Maybe this is just her coming up with a reasoning in her head based on past experiences. Because she has a whole chapter in the book dedicated to her experiences with TV people. But I got the vibe that it was Krista Miller, who plays Kate, not liking her.
Well, that's very random and weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wouldn't expect China to be causing any kind of trouble on set. She seemed like a very calm and nice person, especially around that time. I can't imagine what the issue would be. Maybe it's because the Kate character has to get into a relationship with the Disciplinarian in the episode. Maybe that was just distracting her or something, having Triple H's significant other on set. Who knows? But that's an interesting detail.
So that's why I don't know if that's actually China
Right.
Or not.
It kind of just looks like a China lookalike, to be honest, and I can't really tell. And the quality of, right. of what we're watching is so fuzzy.
Not the best.
That it's really hard to tell. But whoever it is, she's got the Intercontinental title on her shoulder. It's the late 90s design of the WWF Intercontinental title, which makes me very nostalgic because that's the first toy foam title belt that I got as a kid. The one with the purple strap. So that's like, that's one of my favorite belts, even though everyone claims that it's ugly and the other one looks so much better. But
I don't think it's ugly.
Yeah, I've always liked that title. So Triple H's role in this episode, he's actually a very central figure. You know, he's involved in the main storyline, plugging Buzz Beer. And we actually get to see him in the ring. There's a scene where the gang is kind of in the crowd at this wrestling show. And it's weird. It looks like this like wrestling in the round type of setup. And we see Triple H wrestling, just a kind of a generic looking wrestler. And this guy is actually an independent wrestler from around that time named Tom Howard, who wrestled for UPW. Now, longtime wrestling fans may know UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling, as the promotion run by the infamous Rick Bassman. That name will definitely ring some bells for longtime wrestling fans. He's responsible for discovering and training people like Sting and the Ultimate Warrior and John Cena and so on and so forth. Rick Bassman, kind of an infamous figure in independent wrestling. But at this time, UPW was a bit of a developmental territory for WWF. So it makes a lot of sense that they would pull someone from that promotion to appear as the guy that the disciplinarian is wrestling.
That's probably who the little extras were, who we can't identify. They were probably other
people from UPW. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we see the ring in this episode with my ongoing vendetta against boxing rings and wrestling episodes. Now, this may not be a boxing ring, but the ropes are awfully loose, and that makes a difference. You got the standard red, white, and blue ropes that the WWF had just abandoned a few years ago, and you got the blue mat. So this could very well be a WWF ring just set up by people who didn't know how to tighten the ropes all the way. So it, again, looks like a boxing ring because those ropes are so loose.
I also just like this scene because it looks like it'd be like an indie wrestling show, like a little, you know, whatever. And so Drew and his friends are all like trying to get the disciplinarian to be Buzz Beer's spokesman. And they're just like accosting him when he's outside of the ring. And
then he responds.
And he's responding. Like, and I'm trying to figure out, like, when he's responding to them, is he in character as the disciplinarian, or is he, what's his real name in this show? Carol something? Because he's saying stuff like, you know, you can't have a bottle in here. Somebody can get injured. And what are you doing drinking while pregnant? Because Kate's pretending to be pregnant to sneak beer in. So is that just the disciplinarian speaking?
Honestly, I think it's just whatever Triple H. Yeah, it's something like Carol. I love that. I love that his real name is Carol, much like Vader's real name being Leslie in one of the episodes.
Well, and they'd never call him by his first name. They just continuously call him the Dis, or they call him Dis, which is very on brand for Triple H, who I don't think anybody calls him by his real name.
Right, yeah. It's just Hunter.
Yeah.
By the way, since we're talking about Triple H, in the last episode, I neglected to mention something that dawned on me as we were preparing all the Boy Meets World stuff. Sean Hunter. The character in Boy Meets World is literally Shawn Michaels and Hunter Hurst Helmsley.
Okay, but when did Boy Meets
Blew
World...
my mind.
But when did Boy Meets World air?
Oh, that predates it. But that predates it. But I think that is the impetus for them coming together and forming DX originally. I just wanted to get that in because it blew my mind when I thought of it.
That's the only reason they're friends.
Yes.
They were avid Boy Meets World.
Hey, Sean, you want to watch this sitcom with me?
Sean's like drugged out of his mind. This is the only way Triple H can get him to calm down.
Hey, you know, I was on that show before. No, Sean, that was Baywatch.
But, you know, Triple H, or the disciplinarian in this episode, says something that no wrestler, especially around this time, would have said. And I quote, "I have to wrestle in a couple of hours, and I wouldn't want to numb my senses with the effects of alcohol." This is still at a time when wrestlers are taking somas and all kinds of muscle relaxers and painkillers, but he doesn't want to numb his senses with the effects of alcohol. Something Again, that he would have said.
Yes, very Triple H. And also right before this, he spits the beer out in a very Triple H move. I don't know if he was doing that at the time.
He was kind of doing it with the crotch chops.
But it was just, it just looks, it's like, yes, this is this is really just him.
You know, a little touch that I really enjoyed is that the disciplinarian has this press conference after he gets into this little kerfluffle in Atlantic City, was it?
Yeah, they went in a limo from Cleveland to Atlantic City to go gamble because he's never been gambling before. That's another thing.
But he's so hopped up on this buzz beer that he's drunk. He's getting into fights, gets into a fight with Kate, and he's wrestling a statue of Hercules.
Yes.
And gets arrested and has this press conference that the gang are watching on TV. This press conference gave me such a strong DX press conference from 1998 vibe.
Yeah, and this is where I had a question, because it's got the Attitude Era WWF banner in the background.
Yes.
But when we first meet the disciplinarian, and the gang is trying to figure out how much they can offer to pay him to be their spokesperson, they say something like, you know, well, we, you know, why would we pay him a lot? This was also the guy who was just, taking our tickets when we walked in. So that's where I was at first like, what promotion is this? And it led me to think it was just some like low-level indie. But then you see the Intercontinental belt, the WWF logo, and everyone knows him. So why was he taking tickets?
It's strange. Yeah, it presents the WWF as still being this very kind of family-run mom and pop type of promotion, which I guess in a way it is. That's at least its roots. But by this point, it's like, yeah, no, it's a global.
Yeah, it's huge. It's
operation.
Not, it's not like in that 70s show where it's carny and weird.
Again, it's just a fundamental kind of misunderstanding of wrestling, probably right. From the writer's point of view. And the WWF just doing them a solid by sending them their talent and also a banner. So you can say that the WWF was a part of this episode. But yeah, there's still a disconnect. And it's, again, it's always interesting to see how wrestling is portrayed and how the WWF or WWE is portrayed whenever they're a part of something like this, because it's always kind of wildly different, the degrees of actual, you know, reality of wrestling versus the kind of idea of wrestling, the caricature, the funhouse mirror version that so many people have in their minds. So we get a little bit of both in this episode, which is interesting. This is by far the most wrestling heavy episode that we will talk about here,
right. Of
all the other episodes we're going to discuss. He's a wrestler. He's got a championship belt. The WWF is involved. This, I think, ticks many of the boxes that you would look for in a wrestler appearance.
Yeah, for me, this is a great use of a wrestler in a guest appearance, because not only is Triple H a huge part of the plot, not just a side plot, the main plot, but professional wrestling and him being a professional wrestler is probably the most important part of the plot.
Exactly. And especially with him being a spokesperson
for
this beer company that they're trying to get off the ground, it speaks to the popularity of wrestling at the time and how important it was and how, in the end, it works out, because his press conference leads to an uptick in business for Buzz Beer. Of course, they ruin his life. They ruin the disciplinary in his life. His career's in shambles. He's a drunken mess.
He has to encourage the kids not to drink Buzz Beer.
But it all worked out for the gang. And in the end, that's just how sitcoms work.
Everyone wants to try the beer that kicked the ass of the disciplinarian, is what they say.
So overall, I think this was a fun episode. Definitely recommend checking it out, even just to see Triple H and his goofy self. His performance, I think, is okay. He's definitely gotten better at this aspect of things, the acting aspect, if you want to call it that. He's not the greatest actor. He's not the greatest wrestler actor, but he is able to hold his own in these scenes. I think he's competent, if a little bit dry and a little bit uncomfortable, but this is also one of his first appearances in this type of thing. So naturally, he's going to get better as he does more of these.
I also think that Triple H, unlike maybe The Rock, who, you know, some of these wrestlers, they then want to become actors. I think Triple H only wanted to be involved with these things to then promote wrestling, the WWE.
Yeah, anything that Triple H does is going to be tied to WWE in some form or fashion, whether he's playing a wrestler or he's playing, you know, a completely fictionalized non-wrestling character, but it's in a WWE film, a WWE Studios production.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be about the WWE, because that's what he eats, sleeps, and breathes.
Yeah.
And even when we see him the next time, he's still very much, he's playing Triple H.
Yeah.
He's flat out playing Triple H. He is still very much representing pro wrestling.
Yeah, not trying to necessarily further his acting career.
But let's move over now to the next appearance in a sitcom by Triple H. Let's move over to The Bernie Mac Show. Now, for those not familiar, The Bernie Mac Show aired for 5 seasons on Fox from 2001 to 2006. It's available to stream right now on Hulu, Peacock, and Prime Video. So plenty of options there if you're interested. Tessa, how would you describe The Bernie Mac Show?
The Bernie Mac Show is like a lot of other comedian-centered shows in that it's basically just a fictionalized version of the main star's life. And so in this case, Bernie Mac plays a stand-up comedian who suddenly becomes father to his sister's 3 children. We have 2 nieces, 1 nephew. He takes custody of them and has to suddenly deal with children.
Jordan, his nephew, is particularly important for these 2 episodes that we're going to talk about because not only is he involved in the Triple H episode, but he's also involved in the Stone Cold Steve Austin episode.
Yeah, he's central to both wrestling aspects here.
Another important thing to mention is that Bernie does these wraparound segments where he addresses the camera. He sits in his study and he's talking to the camera about the things that are going on the show. So that becomes important when we talk about the Austin episode. Bernie speaks to America directly. So I guess other countries, fuck you. Don't watch. I don't know how many people were watching it in America, to be honest. This is never a show that I watched. While I do adore Bernie Mac, don't get me wrong, I love him, especially in Ocean's 11. This isn't a show that I had ever seen before watching these episodes. I'd heard of it. I knew it existed, but I had never watched it. I know that this is a show that you were really into, though.
I watched The Bernie Mac Show a lot. Most of these shows, I don't know if I was ever watching live, but I feel like The Bernie Mac Show, I might have been because I actually remember watching it in the evenings while shoving Wendy's chicken nuggets in my mouth in my brother's room in the basement.
You and these chicken nuggets, you keep mentioning them.
I like chicken nuggets. But this is another show that I really did watch, though, growing up. And I kind of vaguely remember these 2 episodes that we're going to talk about at least being promoted. So I'm more familiar.
These 2 episodes, and, you know, especially the Austin one in particular, they feel like the type of thing where, oh, this celebrity's promoted as being on this episode of a show. And then you watch the show and it's like 2 scenes.
Very disappointing.
Like, really? Okay. But let's dive into it. Triple H on The Bernie Mac Show, Season 4, Episode 14, The Big Picture, original air date March 18th, 2005. So this is very much evolution, Triple H.
This is the Triple H I'm probably most familiar with.
This is the Triple H most people would probably go to. So a stark contrast from what we got in The Drew Carey Show. But why don't you give us a quick summary of what happens in this episode, mainly pertaining to the Triple H portions.
So while the bulk of this episode centers on Bernie taking his wife and everything she does for him for granted, we're more interested in the little side story here. Bernie's nephew Jordan finds his uncle's Rolodex, and a certain name stands out. He takes that card, and his prank anonymous phone calls have some surprising consequences.
The entire concept of this episode, it honestly seems like the most realistic thing out of all of the plots and setups and ways to get wrestlers into these shows. This seems plausible.
This makes sense.
You know, a celebrity's nephew or a celebrity's kid could conceivably find, you know, a famous wrestler's phone number in an address book or something like that, or going through their parents' phone or whatever. So this is plausible.
Yeah, and something about the Bernie Mac Show is it is, in a way, grounded in reality. Bernie did have custody, I believe, of his sister's kids, or there was something about it is very true to life. So I do wonder if this ever actually happened. Not necessarily with Triple H.
Well, what I want to know is, are Bernie Mac and Triple H really friends in real life? Is Bernie Mac just calling up Triple H on weekends?
I would like to know how they would have met at this point. And wouldn't Triple H then also have Bernie Mac's number and maybe recognize it? I assume Triple H would have caller ID.
Yeah, this was around the time when you still kind of had to know people's phone numbers. And yeah, Triple H would have had You'd think he would have had caller ID, but I don't know. Maybe he's just too busy to even look at the number. Maybe he just picks it up, assumes it's Vince.
Hey, pal, I want to talk about the booking for Raw.
But he gets this kid harassing him about catchphrases.
Yeah. So this whole scenario of Jordan, Bernie Mac's nephew, calling Triple H and bothering him, and Triple H doing anything other than just hanging up and then promptly changing his number.
Yeah.
This is where it's like, okay, this is the heightened sitcom reality version of what would have happened. But I do love the fact that Triple H is just lounging around his house in dress clothes, listening to some hair metal, and then has the time to humor this kid who...
Yeah.
Who just calls just to bother him. And at first, it's just getting him to say his catchphrase. The outdated catchphrase, I am that damn good, which he hasn't said for a few years at this point.
Yeah. You know, the Bernie Mac show began in like 2001, 2002. So theoretically, if Triple H was guest starring at that time, yeah, that would kind of make sense. So I actually thought that it was probably more like early Evolution when this appearance was happening. But no. We're almost at the DX reunion.
Yeah, we are like just shy of that. Yeah, at this point, it's Batista feuding with Triple H. Mm-hmm. Batista just turning on Evolution the month prior. We're in the lead up to WrestleMania 21. So we're almost at a transition point in Triple H's career where he morphs into Glowstick DX Triple H. But he's still very much Evolution Triple H. So he's this big, rich, bad guy with varying degrees of horrible hair. And wearing the suits. And I love the idea of this gruff and mean and, you know, I've got no time for this version of Triple H sitting around talking to this kid. And
they bond.
They eventually do. The second phone call where Triple H is like, nothing. What are you doing? Like, just very condescending.
And they're watching a football game together. Like, he overhears Jordan watching football, and he's like, what's going on? What's going on? And then he turns to the same channel. Like, they're having a moment.
He still threatens to kill him, though, but when he finds out who he is.
It's good-natured.
But I think really the best part of this episode is, Bernie, is that you? Paul, what are you doing on the phone? Jordan? And then, so then Jordan is also has his life threatened by his uncle. So,
which is common in this show.
Jordan is just, he has many threats out against him at this point. But I guess it was all worth it to talk, to bond with Triple H, watch some football on the phone. It would have been great if Stephanie answered.
No.
And then they can talk about how philanthropy is the future of marketing.
She didn't say that. That's not her quote.
But she definitely stitched it on a sampler.
I mean, my favorite part of this whole episode is when Triple H actually shows up at the house.
Yes.
He's cooking, but ready to kill.
Now, this would have been an even more entertaining episode. Bernie Mac and Triple H just cooking dinner. He's got the tongs.
See, that would have been cute.
That They're would have
just,
been
like,
fun.
Barbecuing together.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Triple H could have threatened Jordan in real life.
That would have been fun.
Yeah. This poor Jordan, this kid.
He goes through it.
I've only seen two episodes of this show, but he is either being threatened or, I don't know, I feel like he's just always being picked on or everything kind of centers around something embarrassing related to him.
It's hard because he's like the only boy. But he's also, like, the biggest dork of them all, so he can be easily, like, taken down.
Well, that's a good transition for the next episode, because as little of Triple H as we got in this one, you know, he was only in two or three scenes, the next one is even less.
Yeah.
Stone Cold Steve Austin on the Bernie Mac Show, Season 5, Episode 2, Wrestling with a Sticky Situation. The original air date was September 23rd, 2005, so at this point, Austin is... retired, very much retired, no longer even the sheriff of Raw. This is post that. But he's still kind of making sporadic appearances on WWE programming. But this is around the time when he's starting to dip his toe into the world of acting. He had just made his film debut earlier that year with The Longest Yard. So this is also a transition for Austin in terms of his career outside of wrestling. So it's interesting that he gets so little to actually do in this episode.
Right.
But first, before we dive into it, give us a little bit of a summary of what happens in this episode. Although Austin is not part of the actual story,
right?
It ties into his role here.
If you're a Boy Meets World fan, this plot might sound very, very familiar to you. Jordan is recruited by his school's wrestling team when they need an athlete of a very specific size. He wins his matches by default because there's no one else in his weight range to fight.
Jordan the Corey Matthews.
But Uncle Bernie doesn't know this. He thinks that Jordan's really, really fighting. But Bernie also doesn't really seem to know the difference between professional wrestling and amateur wrestling. But it's okay, because Bernie has someone very special to talk wrestling with.
Ah, yes. Good old Steve, also in the Rolodex. Yes, as you mentioned, this is another instance of amateur wrestling being kind of mishmashed with pro wrestling, as sitcoms are wont to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the last episode, Triple H was very much playing Triple H, a wrestler, who is, you know, flat out acknowledged as, oh, the wrestler Triple H.
Right, they call him by his real name.
This is Jordan joining the wrestling team, which you got to bring in famous amateur wrestler Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, bring in Kurt Angle or something, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. Kurt Angle's still in WWE at this point, right? Or is he just...
Yeah, this would have been pre-even ECW Kurt Angle.
Right.
So.
Perfect opportunity, but I guess Kurt Angle doesn't have the star power, isn't as cool.
I don't know. I feel like if you can get Billy Gunn on an episode of a sitcom, you can definitely get Kurt Angle on an episode of a sitcom. He's a recognizable guy.
Maybe Bernie Mac just didn't want to talk with Kurt Angle.
That's true. Hey, maybe Bernie Mac and Steve Austin are legitimately friends. I could see them somehow being friends.
Well, you know, Triple H, you can't sit down and have a beer with him and just talk about whatever.
You can
do that with Stone Cold.
Right. I mean, Austin's basically just having a broken skull session here with Bernie Mac. They're just kind of sitting down, and these wraparound segments where Bernie addresses the camera, that's where Austin plays a role in this episode.
Yeah.
It's Austin and Bernie just sitting down, chopping it up in segments that seem very largely improvised. And it's really just them talking about the story of the episode, Jordan joining the wrestling team, but also this weird masturbation subplot.
Yeah, it's strange. And I want to point out, the Bernie Mac show before this was on the Parents Television Council's list of good shows. The Drew Carey show, not. It was always on one of the bad lists. Same thing with when we previously talked about That 70s Show, bad list. Bernie Mac show, good. And having this kind of conversation,
it's on the good list, and yet the entire premise of this episode is a bit uncomfortable because it's centered around Bernie thinking that his young nephew has discovered himself and then deciding to make that a topic of conversation with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, and they're also talking about women's fashion because that's the other little side plot. And Steve doesn't really have much to say.
If this doesn't make a lot of sense to you, even if you watch it, it probably won't. Why is Austin here? We don't know. I think he even seems confused as to why he's here. Because at one point in like the third wraparound segment, he's like, man, I thought you were going to bring me in and talk about pro wrestling, drinking beer, whooping ass, raising hell.
Yeah.
To the point where in a later segment, he just flat out gets the hell out
of
there.
He leaves
the chair spinning and slams the door. I love it. But there's not a whole lot here. It's really just Austin commenting, yeah, I think the kid would get ripped in half, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like,
this is what's so frustrating to me. And, you know, kind of similar to when we talked about Mick Foley on Boy Meets World. Stone Cold's a funny guy. He's interesting. He's funny. Why is he not, like, having any, like, not serious, but, like, real role in this episode? Have him, you know, talking with these other characters. Have him do something.
It seems like something that was integrated maybe after the entire story and plot were kind of laid out. Hey, let's just get Austin in for these talking into the camera segments. I don't know what the thought process was. It would have been cool to see Austin show up at Jordan's wrestling match.
I think it could have been cool to have him be the wrestling coach, even.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the wrestling coach has frequent interactions with Jordan. Throw Stone Cold in there. Yeah. Have him do that. But the episode's fine.
Yeah, it's a fine episode of a sitcom. You know, if you just want to watch a fun episode, sure, go ahead. But don't watch this just to see Austin.
Yeah.
Because there's a YouTube video where you can just watch both Triple H and Austin scenes, and it comes to about 5 minutes. So that's what we're working with here.
Like, the Austin segments, they're less than the ads on Hulu. You spend more time going through ads than actually seeing him.
That is a fact. But that was Austin on the Bernie Mac show. Much like Triple H, not as much
beer in the can there as you would hope.
But let's move on now to a little bit more of a of a role for a wrestler on a sitcom. And it's another member of DX. So we've seen Triple H expand his horizons and appear on some sitcoms. But let's now see Billy Gunn appear on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Now, this is a show that I think most people our age will remember. This aired on ABC for four seasons from 1996 to 2000 as part of the TGIF lineup, and then moved over to the WB for three seasons from 2001 to 2003. So this is available to stream on both Hulu and Paramount Plus if you're interested in checking out these episodes. I think Sabrina the Teenage Witch is probably one of the better known sitcoms of its time. I don't think we have to do a whole lot of explaining, but just for those who are unfamiliar, why don't you give us a little bit of a brief summary of what the show is all about?
So basically, when a 16-year-old high school student finds out she's a witch, her two aunts offer guidance on how to control her newly discovered magical powers. But in the episodes we're going to be talking about, she's a little more advanced. She's in college, I think, at this point. So she has a little more control.
Clarissa Explains It All is very much my preferred Melissa Joan Hart project. Whenever I watch Sabrina, I always kind of just wish I was watching Clarissa. I don't know about you. There's something about the show that doesn't click for me the same way that Clarissa does. But I do remember this show being on a lot. Whenever my sister was watching TV in the living room, especially around dinner time, this show would always be on around this time.
Yeah, I used to watch Sabrina religiously after school on ABC Family, I think. It came on right before Gilmore Girls. So after school from 4 to 6 p.m., I was busy. I was booked. You couldn't bother me. I was in my room watching my shows. But I was also really into the animated version of Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Oh, yeah.
I actually remember having a little Sabrina toy at some point that was randomly taken away from me and returned for some reason. I don't remember the details of that. Wow. But I did not have it for very long.
There's a whole story there.
I wish I knew it.
Melissa Joan Hart, though, is no stranger to wrestling. She appears to be a longtime wrestling fan from what we can gather. There was a point where she was live tweeting WWE shows and getting herself into a little bit of trouble with wrestling fans and wrestlers alike when she called Kevin Owens a lazy wrestler in 2015.
She clarifies this in her tweets because he had a comeback and then he blocked her. She clarifies that she wasn't talking about him as a wrestler, as a person. She was talking about Kevin Owens, a character, much like she gets called Sabrina. But that's not how it sounds.
I don't know. I don't think of Kevin Owens when I think of someone you'd classify as a lazy wrestler. I think his matches are always very entertaining.
I find it rich coming from her, a person who heavily, at this point in her career, relies on 90s nostalgia to kind of get her through.
But yeah, that whole interaction resulted in Kevin Owens blocking her, as you said, other wrestlers blocking her, and rumor has it she stopped watching wrestling as a result. So, you know, her wrestling fandom may date back to her time on Sabrina. Of course, as we are about to talk about, she had Billy Gunn and Chyna on episodes of Sabrina. She also had Kevin Nash on an episode of Sabrina. He made a brief appearance, and that's something we may discuss if we ever revisit this topic in the future. But for now, we're going to focus on members of D-Generation X. Two very different appearances here that we are about to discuss from Billy Gunn and Chyna. We start with Billy Gunn, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Season 4, Episode 17, Salem's Daughter. Original air date, March 3rd, 2000. This time in Billy Gunn's career is, I don't know, not too much going on. I guess you had the kind of reunited DX New Age Outlaws thing going on, but he actually was injured around the time when this episode would have come out, was he not?
Yeah, he was actually suffering from a torn rotator cuff, which happened in, I think, late February or early March, right around when this episode came out. And they explained it away by saying he was kicked out of DX because he lost his cool. And he wouldn't return until October of that year. So in this episode, Sabrina finds out that Salem's daughter is getting married in the other realm, but Salem hasn't seen her in decades. And as a cat, Salem can't perform the proper father of the bride duties, so he asks Sabrina to do them for him. The duties aren't exactly what you would expect a father of the bride to perform, and they actually include a wrestling match.
Random wrestling match coming in at the end of this episode. This is another one where I'm like, I don't know if I'd recommend watching the whole thing. You might just want to watch, you know, the last 10 minutes or so if you want to see Billy Gunn show up on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I'll start off by saying, though, you may know the voice of Salem if you've ever seen Exposed, Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets, because he's the narrator of that. And if you haven't seen Exposed, Pro Wrestling's Greatest Secrets, you're in for a real treat. So definitely go look that up. Now, imagine for a minute that it's 2000, you're sitting down, you're watching Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and suddenly Billy Gunn shows up wearing a tearaway tuxedo, no less. I just can't even imagine how that must have felt, just randomly seeing Billy Gunn of all people. If you know him, show up in a role where he's not playing himself. He's playing a wrestler. So he's got that going for him because he can play a wrestler very well. But playing some random wrestler that has to wrestle Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Well, yes, because the context of this is that in the other realm, when you get married, the father of the bride has to fight the father of the groom before they can officially be married. And Billy Gunn's character here is the father of the groom.
Xavier the Avenger Prescott, who is pretty much just exactly like Billy Gunn sans ass references.
Yes, because Sabrina the Teenage Witch is another show that is PTC approved.
Yes, yes. So, of course, we got to have Mr. Ass on. It makes perfect sense when you think about it. But no, this is a very stripped down Billy Gunn. He's just wearing kind of his generic blue tights, but it's a very kind of toned down, generic Billy Gunn. There's nothing that really makes him an Avenger per se, but he plays a wrestler. He has a match. He bumps around for not only Melissa Joan Hart, but also an animatronic cat. And I think the reason why they got Billy Gunn to do this is because what other wrestler would be so giving and willing to bump for Melissa Joan Hart and a fake cat?
Yeah, you can't have like Triple H in this role.
No, you cannot.
You really have to have somebody like Billy Gunn, someone who isn't, you know, the main guy.
But he's a big guy.
He's a big guy.
Billy Gunn, deceptively big. Everyone always mentions this, that you don't realize how big Billy Gunn is until, I think it's really his appearance backstage and beyond the mat where you realize that Billy Gunn is like a massive guy. Mm-hmm. He's deceptively big. He's tall and he's in great shape. And, you know, he looks like a wrestler. He looks like a wrestler would look. So he's a great choice for this. He does a great job. It's just weird.
Yes.
Much like the rest of this show, from what I remember.
It is a weird show, especially when you go into stuff in the other realm. So it's kind of, you know, what you expect.
I could, though, see Teddy Hart watching this and furiously taking notes. Okay, so the cat jumps in because Salem jumps in at one point and interferes and helps Sabrina get a fluke win over Billy Gunn. So that whole thing, I could totally see being an influence on one Teddy Hart.
This episode, like this part in particular, so Sabrina has to take over all these father of the bride duties. She's also a maid of honor, so she has to deal with all of that. Why did nobody tell her that she was going to have to, like, get into a wrestling ring and actually fight someone?
You're asking the wrong person here.
I feel like somebody should have warned her and said, hey, here's the list of things you're going to have to do. By the way, we have an actual wrestler here. He might kill you.
Yeah. At one point, he throws Sabrina over the ropes. But don't worry, she gets caught by, like, 17 people, like it's a Dragon Gate match.
But her slip is showing.
Oh.
The slip's showing. Gotta hide that. She's in a wrestling ring, but that's what's important.
Yes. But as we mentioned, Sabrina gets the win over Xavier the Avenger Prescott with the help of Salem. So you gotta also envision, you know, Sabrina at one point does a disappearing and teleportation type of thing. The Fiend, you know, goes back and studies Sabrina tapes.
That's who would be in the show. If it was today, it'd probably be something like that.
Yeah. So while this is wrestling related, it's turning up the wacky aspects of it with all of the witchcraft and wizardry aspect of things. That's totally not my thing. Totally not interested in it. The rest of the episode, I was totally not interested in. This is not my kind of show. Not my favorite, and definitely not the best wrestler appearance on a sitcom, but at least it was wrestling related, unlike the next one, where China makes a guest appearance on Sabrina the Teenage Witch in a bigger role than Billy Gunn, but not wrestling related at all. This is season 6, episode 21 of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Driving Mr. Goodman, original air date May 3rd, 2002. So China post WWF at this time.
Yeah, so at this time, China is no longer in WWE. She was either fired or left of her own accord in November of 2001. But at this time, she was focusing more on acting and her television career. She appeared on a number of shows in 2002 before she began wrestling for New Japan later in the year.
What a year that was.
Yeah, it's really weird. And then she's on Sabrina the Teenage Witch. And I'm just wondering, like, when was she filming this? Was she still under contract with WWE when this was being filmed or, you know, what? So in this episode, Sabrina's roommate Miles has a huge fear of driving. He thinks his family is cursed. So she offers to be his driving instructor, but during a lesson, they get into a car accident. Well, at first, it seems to be a case of no harm, no foul. The other driver soon changes her tune and sues Sabrina for a fortune, forcing her to try and prove that her car didn't injure anybody.
Now, for those who don't know, who is Miles?
She lives with, I think, three roommates.
Yeah,
and Miles.
She lives
one
with Punky Brewster.
Yes. Miles just happens to be one of them. He's just really, like, afraid. He's a big scaredy cat. I think that's his whole character.
Well, as for China's character, she doesn't play a wrestler, but obviously her physical attributes are going to play into any character that she plays. That's just how the entertainment industry works. China plays a character named Mary Jo Ponder, who is at first just a woman who drives a car, and then a woman who fakes injuries. And then it's later revealed that she is actually a weightlifter, which is at least fitting for China, although at this time she doesn't look like the China of 1997, for example. She kind of looks like a different person, wearing a different hairstyle.
Exactly. The color.
Yeah, different hair color. She's not as instantly recognizable as China in this episode. But China's character is hit from behind by, what's his face?
Miles. While Sabrina and Miles are going for a drive, he's very, you know, skittish because of his fear. So she puts him under a spell to make him a little more confident and at ease. But he gets so comfortable that when Mary Jo kind of stops, she has to stop very quickly, they ram into her. She claims, like, she's really sweet when they get out, really nice, you know, clearly not injured. She claims that, like, a little animal scurried across the street. She had to quickly slam on the brakes. And they exchange information and things seem fine. Doesn't seem like there's going to be any issue.
Until later.
Yes.
When they get served papers.
For $2 million, she's suing Sabrina.
Yeah. Well, she's longer under WWF contract. She's gotta make a living somehow.
But Sabrina doesn't really buy this, of course. So that leads into the little magical hijinks that we see here.
Yes. Talking to Mary Jo's car to get the 411 on what's really going on here, which is, of course, that she's faking this injury. Mm-hmm. And she is committing fraud. And the scene of China laying in bed with the neck brace, mm-hmm. The first thing that I thought of when I saw that was when Ivory was in the Right to Censor and feuding with China. And she did that skit where I think Val Venus was playing Jim Ross interviewing China, who played by Ivory, mocking China's neck injury with the neck brace. That's immediately what I thought of.
Yeah, it is an interesting choice to have her just laying there with with the neck brace.
Yeah. The writers of this show probably have no idea of any of the storylines or anything, you know, any injuries that China's had. And I'm sure if they knew that she had a neck injury, they might not have gone this route, or maybe they would have made it a different kind of injury or something else.
Maybe they would have done her whole character completely differently.
Maybe
she would have been a wrestler.
Maybe. I mean, she's almost a wrestler. She's a bodybuilder. She's a weightlifter here. So it wouldn't have been a stretch to even make her a wrestler.
She's just all, Mary Jo here is just all about the money.
Yeah. She's a scam artist, but eventually she is exposed by Sabrina by way of magic.
Now, this part killed me. So the car tells Sabrina, hey, I just dropped her off at the gym. Go catch her. I bet you can get her. And so Sabrina goes and, you know, Mary Jo's still putting on the act. She's got the brace. She's still acting very injured. So Sabrina, you know, using her magical ways, turns herself into a bodybuilder. And it is the most uncomfortable looking image I can think of in this show.
It's horrifying. It is evil and diabolical. And I never want to see it again.
I hate it. It's just so, I don't like it.
Yeah, this is an image that will haunt my dreams for weeks to come. But yeah, eventually Mary Jo exposes herself as not actually being injured. She does a deadlift, I believe that's what it is. Yeah, I don't know anything about weightlifting. I don't care. That leads to the charges being dropped and Mary Jo being charged with fraud.
Yes, because Mary Jo comes in and is like, I can't let this girl, you know, take my record away. I have to prove that I'm stronger. And then there goes the neck
ultimately
brace.
Leads to her demise. So another instance of a wrestler's character having their entire life ruined by the main characters of a sitcom.
What is up with the DX members just dying?
Hasn't China suffered enough?
Honestly, why are we doing this to her so soon after?
Yeah, well, there's a lot more for China to do here than, say, Billy Gunn or Austin. But overall, I feel like this was probably my least favorite because it just had nothing to do with wrestling. And I know that's, you know, I don't know if it's silly to say that, but the more they have to do with wrestling, the more I enjoy these appearances.
So this
to me is down at the bottom with Mankind busting in.
See, yeah, I disagree. I think this is a good way to use a wrestler in a guest role because you can't just always have it be about wrestling, especially at this point in her career where I think she's trying to break away from that a little bit. You know, she had been acting, she had been in other shows, Pacific Blue, Third Rock from the Sun prior to this. I think it's nice, and I think it's interesting that they chose to not focus on wrestling. And so I think I don't think she's a great actress. I don't think she...
I think she was fine.
She's fine. I think Triple H in his roles was a little better. But I think for this role, I like it. I think it's a good way to use her.
Yeah, I get all that. And I'm all for that. Wrestlers, you know, showing their range. However, I was just bored watching this. It wasn't my favorite. I think it's just because I don't like the show very much.
Right.
So I think Billy Gunn and Sabrina, you know, it was at least Billy Gunn's, episode had a wrestling match in it. So that was something I could sink my teeth into. This was just a fake injury, which in itself is a very wrestling thing to do.
Right.
But just outside of the context.
Well,
so
they're still playing on that strong man, strong woman trope you have a wrestler appear.
Right. Of course, because you can't have someone with a physique appear on anything and not have that be the central focus.
They can't just be an average person.
No, not at all. Well, I guess that lends credence to Vince McMahon's, you know, his whole idea of he wants his wrestlers to walk through an airport and be recognized as being someone, even if you don't know who they are. You just want to look at them and say, that's got to be a celebrity. That's got to be someone because they don't look like the average person. So I guess that lends a little bit of credence to that, you know, largely outdated idea.
Well, do you think someone watching this would have recognized China in this role? She looks different, like we talked about, and she's not credited as China, of course.
Right.
She wasn't allowed to use the name.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if China is probably one of the more recognizable figures coming out of that time period, but it's a few years later. So I don't know. Like, I really don't know what the average, because I can only come at this from a wrestling fan perspective.
Right. Because when she was on Whose Line, she was guest starring on that around, you know, within the same year, I'd say. And she still very much looks like China, what you imagine China to be. But here the hair is different. You know, obviously she's wearing completely different clothes.
Right.
So I do wonder, you know, would they recognize her? Because wrestling isn't referenced.
Right. But as we come to a close, as we wrap up this little bonus exploration of wrestlers on sitcoms, we may revisit this at some time in the future. But for now, do we have any final thoughts, any takeaways from these episodes that we've examined over the past two episodes?
Well, I noticed something bizarre about all of the wrestler appearances on sitcoms we've talked about so far, whether it was that 70s show to now. They have all been on either ABC or Fox. I don't know if that's just a weird coincidence because obviously, you know, there's been other appearances on shows that aren't on those networks, like China's appearance on Third Rock from the Sun. But that is kind of an interesting thing. Like, was there a specific relationship with, like, ABC?
No. That's interesting. I mean, we know that WWE has the relationship with Fox now.
Right.
But, you know, WWE was traditionally an NBC property, being on USA and things like Saturday Night's Main Event being on NBC. So I don't see the correlation there. If anything, you would think that they would have been on NBC
more
properties
often.
More yeah. often. But that's an interesting kind of through line.
Maybe the drama shows that we see wrestling appearances on, maybe those were more in the NBC networks. But for the sitcoms, it's largely these two networks.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's something to keep in mind for when we do look at wrestlers appearing on other types of shows, what network they're on. I know there's a lot of USA stuff like Pacific Blue, mm-hmm. Walker, Texas Ranger, that type of thing. So that'll be interesting to keep an eye on in the future. But for now, what would you say your favorite of all of the guest appearances that we've looked at? What would you say your favorite and least favorite have been?
My least favorite is easy. I'd say it's probably Stone Cold on the Bernie Mac show. Just because it's nothing. At least Mick Foley's bit on Boy Meets World was funny. You know, it was weird, but it was funny. My favorite, I'm biased, so I think I'm going to go Triple H on the Drew Carey show. Triple H is one of my favorite wrestlers. I have a long-lasting love for him, even though I also hate a lot of the things that he does. And I really, you know, have a connection to the Drew Carey show. So I'm going to go with that.
Okay, good choices. My least favorite is tough because I could say so many bad things about Mankind's appearance, Austin's appearance. But I think ultimately China's was the one where, as I was watching it, and because we had to watch most of the episode multiple times because she appears throughout most of the episode, it's the one where I really felt like, I kind of don't want to watch this. I'm not into this. At least Austin's was quick and we can get in and out. And really just focus on those wraparound segments when we were rewatching. But China's dragged to me. So that would be my least favorite appearance. My favorite, I think, is still Vader on Boy Meets World as Frankie's dad, specifically that third appearance.
Right.
That's like the culmination of everything. He has a nice story arc. It's all wrapped up with a nice little bow. And we get a WWF house show. So that's a cool kind of snapshot of that period of time in wrestling and in the WWF. So I think that's like as good as it gets for a wrestler appearing on a sitcom, honestly. I think that's the creme de la creme.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I really did enjoy Triple H on the Drew Carey show as well. I thought that was a lot of fun. But that's going to do it for this bonus episode of Pro Wrestling Repackaged. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we appreciate it. And we will be back soon with another big bonus episode, taking a look at a little one-season wonder show called The Big Show Show. It'll be Paul White repackaged.
Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PW Repackaged and email us at pwrepackaged@gmail.com.
Subscribe on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or your favorite podcast app. And visit pwrepackaged.crd.co for links to everything.
If you'd like to support the show, please consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or any other platform that features reviews.
Pro Wrestling Repackaged is a Multitrack Minds production. Visit multitrackminds.com for projects and audio production services by yours truly.